We are beginning Masechta Bava Metzia. So now, as we learned in Bava Kamma, there's one way of looking at it is that all three Babas are considered one long Masechta. So now, originally it was all called Masechta Nezikin, after Seder Nezikin. So now, in Bava Kamma, we were focusing mostly on cases between one person and another that have to do with damages by a person's animal or his other property, like bor and eish, or damages by him himself, like choivel or stealing, etc. Here, Bava Metzia is going to be focusing also mostly on things that cause claims between one person and another, but not so much, not involving damages so much, but involving other kinds of business relationships. For example, we're going to start by talking about Metzia, where a person found something. And there's a claim between where people found something and there's a claim between them, which one actually owns it. In general, the first two parakim are mostly going to talk about the dinim of lost objects, and second parak mostly about the mitzvah of hashavas aveda. Then we have shomrim and buying and selling and ribis and workers and various other kinds of things, and those are going to basically be the kind of things we're talking about in this masechta. There's a sicha actually where the Rebbe talks about the idea based on a Zohar that sees a hint to the three babas in the pasuk. I'll call dvar pesha. I'll call aveda shiyema ki huzeh, where I'll call dvar pesha refers to Bava Kamma and aveda refers to Bava Metzia. And actually, I think it says the aveda refers to Bava Basra. But anyway, whatever the point is, the Rebbe develops the idea in a sicha in one of the later years that the three babas represent a progression in relationships between people. You start off with the kind of thing in Bava Kamma, the adversarial one, where the uncivilized one, like where one person has damaged or injured the other. Then you come to Bava Metzia, which is more civilized behavior, and then finally you come to Bava Basra, which starts out Hashutfin, which is talking about cases of partners and neighbors and different things like that. So it represents going higher and higher in our relationships with other people and with our relationships with the world leading up to Yemos HaMashiach. So now again, for the beginning of the Masechta talks about things involving lost objects. And the first case of it, then the Mishnah begins. Shnayim uchzim b'talis. You have two people holding on to a talis. Ze oimani mitzasiha, v'ze oimani mitzasiha. Each one says that I found it. Rashi points out that it would have to be that they're actually both holding on to it. The point being, therefore, that one does not have any greater koyach than the other. If one of them had it exclusively in his hands, then we would have a different din than we'd have in the Mishnah. We would say Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Arayah. Tosfos further discusses what about what. So here we're saying they're holding on to it. What about, for example, you have other cases in other places in Shas where they're not actually holding on to it, and there we have different dinim. Sometimes we say, sometimes we do say, as we're going to say in our Mishnah Yachloiku. Sometimes we say called the Alam Gvar. So there's a so there's a, there'll be a distinction. There'll be a distinction. Tosfos also deals with the question whether it's possible to say that both their claims are true, as we're going to say in our Mishnah, where each one claims I found it. That may well be true. Both of them may have picked it up at the same time, and therefore they are actually equal partners in it, as opposed to other cases where they're arguing about something and there's no way that it's possible for it to be true. So therefore, then we say a different case, Yehei Munachat Sheyaveh Eliyahu, as we'll learn later in the Masechta. Then we say we set it aside until Eliyahu Hanavi comes and figures it out, or until one of them admits to the other. So we have three. So we have various distinctions when. So the case of our Mishnah. So it doesn't necessarily require them to actually be holding on to it, Tosfos says, but it does require that both of their claims can be true, and that neither one has a greater claim to it than the other. Tosfos also adds, by the way, why of all things does the Masechta begin with this case? Because we just learned at the end of Bavakama, we have the case over there involving you have the worker, you have the carpenter and the chips and the chips of wood and the sawdust that he produces from his work. What belongs to him? What belongs to the Balabas? As far as a tailor, what belongs to him? What belongs to the Balabas? So here, in a similar vein, we have something like that over here that involves dividing something between two people. So anyway, so here you have the two people holding on and each one claiming, "Ani mitzasiha, I found it." It would have to be, by the way, the Rosh points out, obviously, if they found it in a place where they have to return it, then we're not talking about, then neither of them is claiming ownership of it, because then they have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Obviously, we have to be talking about, for example, it's in a place, it's in a city that's mostly goyim, whereas we'll learn in the next parak, as we'll learn in Eilam Metzias, then they're not obligated to return it. So then each one of them has a claim to it, and now both of them have a claim to it. Continues the Mishnah, Ze'er Mekula Shali, Ve'er Mekula Shali. Each one says, "It all belongs to me." Now, if they're saying each one I found it, then it means they're also saying that it belongs to me. So what is it? What is this? What are these words in the Mishnah adding? We're going to see in the Gemara the discussion of that point. Anyway, so what we do is Zeh Yishava She'en LeBepachas Mechetzia. The first one swears that he owns not less than one half of it. So he doesn't swear that he owns the whole thing, as we'll eventually see in the Gemara why that is. Why don't we just tell him to take a shavur that he actually owns the whole thing? But here he doesn't do that, as we'll learn in the Gemara. The reasons why. In a few days, Be'ez Hashem, instead he swears that he owns not less than half of it. So in other words, he's saying, in effect, I own at least half of it. Maybe I own the whole thing, but at least I own at least half of it. The other one swears the same thing, and then they divide it up. Now dividing it up, as we're going to see in the Gemara, doesn't mean that they actually physically split the talus in half. What it means is they're both joint owners of it. Then what they're going to do with it at that point, they can decide. They can decide to wear it. They can decide to switch back and forth who's going to wear it. They can decide to sell it and split the money. In Bava Basra, we're going to talk about a concept called good or good, which means that when you have two people that own something, and for whatever reason, we're not able to split it up between them, a chotzer that's too small, for example, or something like this, where if we split it up, it'll ruin its value, or whatever. Then we have a concept called good or good, where one of them can say to the other, either you buy out my share, or let me buy out your share. Whatever the case, so here, in the case of the talus, they can do any of the above. If they want to split it, they could do that as well, but then... Another case, what if one of them says it's all mine and the other one says it's half mine? So in other words, he agrees that half of it belongs to the other guy. But now he's saying the argument is only on the other half. So the one who says it's all mine should swear that he owns not less than three quarters of it. So he swears on the half that the other guy is moida in, and then in addition, he swears that he owns at least a quarter, at least one quarter of the remaining one half. The one who says it's half mine, he should swear that he owns not less than a quarter of it. And then each one gets their share. The one gets three quarters, and the other one gets one quarter, as we said before, meaning, in other words, that they own it jointly. The Rosh points out, the question is, in this case, one of them is moida to the other on half of it. Why are we making the one swear that he owns not less than three quarters? Why don't we tell him, swear that you own not less than a quarter? Because half of it, the other guy's moida to you, and you should be able to take it without a shvur. So the Rosh explains the reason is because otherwise he could play a trick over here. Otherwise, what would he do? He would swear that he owns not less than a quarter, and he would have in mind that he means that quarter is within the half that already he's getting because the other guy was murdered to him. And therefore, so now the whole point of a shvua is to dissuade anybody who's making a false claim, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, to prevent him from taking something that doesn't belong to him, knowing how serious a shavua is. And the Gemara in Masechta Shavuos tells us that before a person takes a shavua in Beis Din, they warn him how severe a false shavua is, how it affects the entire world. So that will cause him to back off if, in fact, he knows his claim is not true. But here, The Rosh points out, if you make him take a Shavua on one quarter, then he can use that to play a trick. He can say, you know what, this is what I had in mind, is that the one quarter that I'm swearing on is actually within the half that the other guy is moided to me, and therefore that I didn't actually swear a false Shavua, and then he's going to then, and then that's not going to dissuade him. So therefore we make him swear on three quarters. Tosfos also points out, and so do a number of other Rishonim, doesn't he have a migri over here? He could have said it's all mine, so therefore, so why, now the question is, so the Rosh's question was about the one who's swearing that he owns three quarters. Now the question becomes, actually, on the one who's swearing that he owns one, that he owns one quarter, why do we make him swear at all? Why doesn't he have a migri that that he could have said I own half of it, or I could have said he does say he owns half of it. He has a migri. He could have said that he owns the whole, that he owns the whole thing. So actually, various other Rishonim do deal with this as well. The Nimuka Yosef on the Rif gives an answer because he would rather he'd rather. But like this, it's not so much a migri because he would rather be able to claim to make a claim and be able to have that claim and then be able to have that claim recognized rather than to make a greater claim and he's only getting part of it. The Nimuka Yosef's lashon on it. Let's see is. So his lashon on it is when he says chetz yeshali, we don't say that he could have made a taina on other mammon, that he's making a taina on one mammon, he could have made a taina on a greater mammon if the Mukhi Yosef says if he were to take half, then we would say he would rather say chetz yeshali and be able to claim everything that he's getting rather than saying kula shali and only getting half of what he claims. So it's not really a migrin. Tosfos over here gives a different answer that we don't say a migri lahoitzi. We don't say a migri in order to take money from somebody else, only in order to keep money that he already has. And here we're talking about we'd be using this migri to take more from somebody else, to be taking an entire half. So therefore, we're not going to do that. And there is in fact discussion about that. They bring up against the Nimuka Yosef. They bring up a Tesefta on this Mishnah that gives a case where a person says shlishli, one third of the talis belongs to me. Where they are also where each person swears, and the one who says that it all belongs to me gets 5/6, and the other one gets 1/6. Whereas a point to the Nimuka Yosef, still you could say that he should have been believed with a migri when he says shlishli, because he could have said kula shali, and at least he would have collected more than a shlish. It's one thing when you say over here that he's collecting, that he's claiming a half, and you say migri that he could have claimed the whole thing. But when he's claiming that there you don't have, it's either a half or a whole, basically. There's no particular reason he should be claiming a fraction between a half and a whole, whereas he could be claiming, according to the Tosefta, a third, and have a migri that he could have said a half. So there is actually, I'll explain soon, there's a long Rishima from the Rebbe that talks about this whole Mishnah and part of the Gemara over here and explains it, al pi avoda, but... In the earlier part of that Rishima, the Rebbe actually deals with this issue on a nigla dika level, and discusses the bottom line is the Mishnah does not mention this case of the one third, only the Tosefta mentions it, and you can't say that you can learn one third. You can't say that you can learn the case of one third from one half. In fact, they are very different, because you have this consideration of migur lahoitzi that Tosfos is bringing up, and this consideration of what the Nimuka Yosef is saying about what he could have claimed versus what he did claim. And he goes into a little pilpul about it, about how exactly would you be able to derive one from the other? And the fact is, the Mishnah doesn't do that, as we'll talk about soon, the distinction there. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Hoyu shnayim roichven al gabi behema. If you have two people riding on an animal, or one person is riding on an animal and the other one is leading the animal, And here the chiddush is Rashi says that both of them are equal in being kona, an animal that they found. It's an animal of hefker, and now the fact that one is riding and one is leading doesn't give one of them a greater claim to the animal than the other. So similarly, zeh makula shali v'zeh makula shali. If each one says this animal completely belongs to me, zeh yishava she'en l'mapachas mechetzia v'zeh yishava she'en l'mapachas mechetzia. Each one again swears that he owns not less than half of the animal. V'yachloiku, and again they divide it, meaning again they divide the value of the animal. And again, the point is that we shouldn't think that the one who's riding it has a greater claim or the one who's leading it has a greater claim. No, they both have equal claims. V'yachloiku, and therefore they split it up. The Mishnah finishes off. Bizman Shehim Modim, if they agree to one another, so they both agree, for example, that they picked up a talus together. Or we have Adim that's what happened. Then they divide it up without a shvua, and we'll see eventually in the Gemara what the chiddush of that is. Obviously, if they agree to one another, they both picked it up, then they split it. There's no question, and then so forth. It actually mentions over here, the Gemara is going to explain that we see with this the concept of hamagbia metziah l'chaveri, kona chaveri, if Reuven picks up a lost object, having in mind to be koneh on behalf of Shimon, that works. So it doesn't even necessarily need to be that Reuven and Shimon physically picked it up both together. It's possible to have that Reuven alone picked it up, but he had in mind to be koneh it or half of it on behalf of Shimon, and therefore we're saying that therefore that's the way it remains. But we'll see about that in the Gemara later on Daf Ches. So to start with, in that Rishima of the Rebbe, originally the Rebbe had written it in order to give over to Tom Katzmimim at the beginning of a Zman, and it's a very long thing, but the you have actually earlier Maimorim, you have a Maimor of the Friedrich Rebbe that discusses the deeper idea behind Shnaim Ochsin Batalis, is it for the Talis over here refers to mitzvahs. And you're talking about that two people are arguing over a mitzvah, who gets the mitzvah has been accomplished, who gets the schar of it, who gets the benefit of having done that mitzvah. So in a maimer, the Friedrich Rebbe mentions this point briefly, but doesn't elaborate that much on it. And this Rishima, the Rebbe elaborates on it much more and explains, we're talking about, we know that Torah is compared to food and mitzvahs are compared to levushim. And you have an aspect of the mitzvah that is specifically compared to a levush, the aspect of it that's more makif on the person, that doesn't get embedded into him, but we're talking about that's makif around him. So the part that gets embedded, the fact, for example, that a person's own neshama becomes more refined from it, the fact that he learns Torah and understands it, that there can't be an argument about. Obviously, the one who actually learned the Torah, who does the mitzvah, is going to be the one who gets the schar of it. But we're talking about when we have the makifdik part, there can be an argument. And in fact, for that reason, it starts out, Shnayim Uchzin Batalis, literally it means two people are holding on to a garment, meaning of necessity, it's going to be a lot of times that you're going to have such an argument. The expression is not Shnayim Shahoyu Uchzin Batalis or something like that, which could imply that it's a once in a while thing, but rather Shnayim Uchzin Batalis, it's a regular thing. Two people are holding on to the talis and each one making these claims. Anyway, so now, for example, so the Zerima Animitzasiya, the Zerima Animitzasiya, and each one says Kula Shali. So the idea is, in other words, for example, you have, let's say, a person, so starting with, the Rebbe explains the two cases in the Mishnah and the one case in the Tesefta refer respectively to a Tzaddik, a Benini, and a Rosha. You have a tzaddik, and we don't mean necessarily a full-fledged tzaddik, but at least somebody who, regarding this particular matter, is a tzaddik, that he has a natural affinity for this kind of mitzvah. We have these days in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe discusses this point, that you have different people have different degrees of yetzer hara on different things, and therefore what's easy for one person might be very difficult for another. Anyway, so here you have, for example, a person who a certain mitzvah comes very easy to him. So he claims, Animat Sasiha, he claims that I found it, meaning, in other words, it's something that came to me milamila, and then Kula Shali, and it all belongs to me, meaning, in other words, yes, somebody else told me to do this mitzvah, but after all, he's saying I would have done it on my own, and therefore I should get. We're not even talking about doing a mitzvah for schar. We know that a person doesn't do a mitzvah al menas the kabel pras, but nevertheless, he's saying, as far as the ruchnias tikka elevation of it, should be all mine. And meanwhile, the other person, the mashpia, the mashkiach, the one who told him to do this mitzvah, is also saying, you know what? Yes, so you would have done it. You have a natural affinity to it. You're the kind who would have been very likely to do it. But after all, you might not have. You might have slacked off on it, whatever. I'm the one who encouraged you to do it. And therefore, ani mitzasiya, and therefore, kula shali. So now what we do is we make each of them take a shvua, where the idea of a shvua, again, is to dissuade them from their claim in case they're not telling the truth. But the point is, therefore, that a shvua represents strengthening a person's sense of Yiras Shemayim. So how do we know when the one, the Mechiach, how do we know whether he truly deserves a share in the schar and in the refinement of the neshama that comes from this mitzvah? Is, was there Yiras Shemayim involved? When he gave the other person the toichacha and told him to do this mitzvah, did it come from a sense of Yiras Shemayim? So if he's able to swear on that, then yes, he deserves his portion in that talus. And it's the same thing the other one, who actually did the mitzvah, he has to also swear to show that he had Yiras Shemayim, that he didn't just do the mitzvah in a superficial way. And then yachloiku, and then the fact is that each one accomplished their part of the mitzvah, and therefore each one gets their share, that each one gets a half a share in the schar of the mitzvah. Then the second case of the Mishnah about kula shali and chetz yashali, that ever goes on to say, would be referring to a beinani. Again, not a tanya beinani, and not a regular beinani as far as all his mitzvahs and averus, but rather a beinani in this specific area of life, where you have his nefesh elikis versus nefesh abahamis about it. Therefore, he's claiming only half of it. He's saying that at least half of me, I have a yetzer tov, I have a nefesh elikis, so at least half of me would have done it. And meanwhile, the mechiach is saying kula shali. So then we're saying that each one, again, each one swears, each one brings out the Yiras Shemayim, and therefore now the Mechiach actually gets three quarters of it, representing that he gets not only a schar for the fact that he got the other guy's Nefesh HaBahamis to go along with it, he even gets a schar for half of the fact that the other guy's Nefesh HaLekis went to do it. So therefore, three quarters versus one quarter. And then the Rebbe goes on to talk about, in the Tesefta, it talks about where he's claiming one third, that one is talking about a Russia in this particular area. Now, the Mishnah doesn't deal with that because the Mishnah was written when the Jewish people were on a higher level. The Tesefta is already a later generation, and therefore the Tesefta has to deal with a Russia. And with him, there's one third in the sense there you have to consider his goof, his Nefesh Elikis, and his Nefesh Abahamis. And then it goes on to explain why by the Tzaddik and the Beinani, that point about the goof wasn't relevant. Anyway, so therefore it also winds up that he gets one sixth of the schar, half the fact that his nefesh elikis did it, whereas the mechiach gets the rest of the schar. So thus far the Mishnah, and then further on in that Rishima, the Rebbe goes on to deal with things in the Gemara, which we'll learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about those. So the Gemara starts off. Lomali the Mishnah Zeumani Mitsasia, Zeumani Mitsasia, Zeuma Kulashali, Zeuma Kulashali. Why does the Mishnah phrase it like that? This one says, I found it. And that one says, I found it. This one says, it's all mine. And that one says, it's all mine. It sounds repetitious. Listening Choda, it should just say one Kate. Listening Choda, it should say one thing. So it should say Mitsasia or Kulashali. And the Gemara answers, it is Choda Katani. It is one thing that the Mishnah is saying. Ze'em ani mitzasiya v'kula shali. Ve'ze'em ani mitzasiya v'kula shali. Each one saying, I found it, and therefore it's all mine. And the other one saying, I found it, and therefore it's all mine. So it's not repetitious. We want to clarify that each one is actually saying that he should own the entire thing. Well, the Gemara asks, well, listen, I know Mitzasiya. Well, okay, but why doesn't it just say that? It should say, I found it, Vano Yadina de Kulashali, and automatically we'll know that means he's saying that it's all mine, because obviously he found it. And like the Rosh said before, we're talking about it's in a city of all Goyim, then obviously it all belongs to him. So the answer is itona animitzasiya. Yes, but if the Mishnah had only said the words animitzasiya, have amina maimitzasiya reisiha, then you would think when he says mitzasiya means actually he's saying only that I saw it first. And you would think it means that even though he didn't actually reach his hands, you would think that maybe he's able to be koine with just re'iyah alone. So they, and that's not so, because he's not koneh until he actually picks it up. Tana kolashali. Therefore, the Mishnah continues with the words kolashali. Dibir iya loikoni. Just seeing it by itself is not going to be enough to be koneh. In fact, the next Mishnah is going to talk about that. So the next couple of Mishnayos in the Perek are going to talk about such concepts where a person sees a metzia, then that's not enough. Then that's not enough to be koneh. Tosfos points out, in those cases, you have, for example, that he tells the other person, give it to me, or he falls on it. So there you could say he's demonstrating with that he knows that Re'iyah is not koneh, and therefore he wants to do something else. But we still need our Mishnah to be stressing that he shouldn't think that just seeing it by itself is already enough to make a kinyan if he doesn't do anything else afterwards, and therefore it has to use the expression kulashali to clarify that point. In that Rishima that Eber talks about, the deeper idea behind it is, in other words, that when you're talking about that you have a mitzia, you have something that came milamayla, you have a yisodus milamayla, it's not enough for it to just be seen. You actually have to bring it into yourself. It's not enough that you just see it superficially. You have to actually bring it more. You have to actually bring it more into yourself. And if not, then it can't really be called a mitzia. So it says kolashali to clarify to bereiya lekoni that you're not koneh with reiya. But the Gemara asks, "Me motzes amrit my mitzasiya risia? How could you even think that the word mitzasiya in the Mishnah means that the person is claiming risia that I saw it?" The Amar Rabbanoi, didn't Rabbanoi say, on the side of it here, it says Marshal has the Girsa Ravina, which we learned this just a week ago in Bava Kamma, umetzasa da'asoy le'yode mashma. When the Pasuk says about a lost object, it says that if you find any aveda sachicha, anything that belonged to a yid, umetzasa, and you find it, then you're not allowed to pretend that you didn't see it. You have to return it. So Rabbanoi, or Ravina, had said that the word umetzasa means that you actually picked it up. The point of that was, we learned in Bava Kamma, on Daf Kof Yud Gimel, we were talking about the fact that you don't have a mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda to a goy, except we said over there, when it's a matter of making a Kiddush Hashem, or preventing a Chilul Hashem. The point being, you shouldn't think that, says Rabbanoi, that it's one thing if you only saw the mitzvah and it belongs to a goy, then you don't have a mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda. But if you actually picked it up, maybe you do have even a mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda for him. So he says, no, since the Pasuk says with Sasa, implying that you actually picked it up, then therefore that means that even when you picked it up, still the concept of Ashavas Aveda applies only to Aveda Sachicha, only to something that was lost by your fellow Yid. So we see, therefore, the word of mitzasa clearly means to pick up. So in our Mishnah as well, when it says ani mitzasiha, automatically means that he picked it up. Why would the Mishnah then have to say that he says kulashali to clarify that we don't just mean that he found it by seeing it? If we see from that point that Rabbi Noi makes, that the word mitzia refers to actually picking it up. And the answer is, ain. Yeah, sure. Umetzasa dekra de asil yode mashma. Sure, when it says umetzasa in the pasuk, it means that he actually picked it up. But you could still say umiu tana lishna de almanaka. However, the tana though is not necessarily basing himself on the wording of the pasuk. He's basing himself on common language that people use. So in common usage, when a person sees something, Omar, he says, I found it. So even when it didn't reach his hands yet, you could mistakenly think from just the words that it means that he's actually koneh by just seeing. Therefore, Tony kolashali. Instead, therefore, the Mishnah adds the words kolashali to clarify the Re'iya ba'amalekoni that in fact he's not koina with just Re'iya. Tosfos points out, actually, if it was a matter of hefker, he would be koina with Re'iya alone. But here we're talking about Tosfos says no. So there you're also talking about hefker because we're talking about Metzia, which is able to keep. Tosfos says when we say at the end of the Masechta, we're going to learn a concept called habota behefker koni. Looking at hefker is enough to acquire it. That would be he actually did some kind of maisa. The cases over there, for example, they found grain growing and he made a little fence around it or something. So that would be enough. He didn't actually pick up the grain itself or do any kind of maisa kinyan on it, but he did something to demonstrate his ownership of it. Here we're talking about he only saw it, so therefore that's not enough to for him to be koined at all. And the Mishnah therefore is clarifying that with the words kolashali again, because if we only had the word matzasiha, yes, in principle the word matzasiha means based on the posik, means that he actually picked it up. But in Loshon B'nei Adam, it's not necessarily like that, and therefore we have to stress that point. So again, and that then, and that's the point. In other words, in that Rishima that ever develops the idea that, in other words, the same thing. You know, b'chlal, sometimes you have a person has a hiru tshuva without even any preparation for it, and sometimes it may be far beyond the level that he's in now, that he's on now. But he needs to actually go and absorb that and actually make something of it. So you need to actually have that he doesn't just see it, he actually does something about it he actually has to pick it up or something, and that way the Metzia becomes something by him where then we can talk about Kulo Shali or Chetz Yishali or any of that. Okay. So the Gemara asks, fine, but still, V'lisni Kulo Shali, V'lai Boya no Metzia. Okay, but fine. We're saying that I had to say kula shali because otherwise you would misunderstand and think that mitzasiha means I only saw it and that that's enough to be koine. But now let's say the other way around. Then it could have said kula shali and not say I know mitzasiha, and that would make the whole thing clear. Kula shali, why is it all mine? Because I found it. So why does it have to mention b'chlal da'ani mitzasiha? And the answer is Yitona Kula Shali, because if it only said that, Hava Amina Ba'alma Dekatoni Mitzasiya B'ri'iya Ba'alma Kani, you might think, fine, in our Mishnah, it doesn't say Mitzasiya, but in other cases, when we talk about a person finds a Mitzia and he's koine it, you would think that he's koine it from when he sees it. Tana, no Mitzasiya, Bahada Tana, Kula Shali. Therefore, in our Mishnah, it mentions both points, Mitzasiya and Kula Shali. And that way the extra words in the Mishnah teach us, and we can use this to learn for all other places in Shas, that Mitzia means actually picking up the thing, and that, or at least like Tosfos said, doing some kind of Maisa to show, some kind of Maisa cotton to show your ownership of the thing, rather than just seeing it. All right, the Gemara asks, so fine. So everything that we've been saying so far then assumes that the mitzasiya and kula shali are in fact one claim that the person is making. Mitzasiya and therefore kula shali. Why do we need to say mitzasiya in order that we should know for other places that what the word matzah means? And why does it need to say kula shali? So we don't think that mitzasiya means that I picked it up. But all of that assumes that we're saying that it's one claim. Mitzasiya means and therefore kula shali. But the Gemara asks, so mi matzis amrit. How could you say that it is one claim rather than two separate claims? The fact is, the Mishnah is saying extra words over here. Ze oimer and ze oimer. If it was one claim, then at least it should have said then ze oimer mitzasiya ze kula shali. That way you have the word mitzasiya, you have the word kula shali. It'll clarify everything that we said so far about the definition of mitzasiya and about the definition of mitzasiya here and every place else. But it didn't have to say again, ze oimer, kula shali. Why does it say the word ze oimer again by that? So we can't use the answer that we said, that it means that mitzasiya and kula shali are all one long continuous claim. It must be two different statements. Omar Papa, the Tamer of Shimi Ba'ashi. So the Papa says, or some say, of Shimi Ba'ashi said, Ba'amri La, or others say Kedi. Others say Kedi, says it. Now elsewhere, Rashi explains that Kedi is Shem Chocham, is actually the name of a Talmud Chocham. So therefore, we have three different versions of who said it, a Papa of Shimi Ba'ashi or Kedi. A number of other Rishonim explain that actually the word kedi means literally for nothing, like empty. So it means, in other words, according to the third version, we don't know who said it. It was an anonymous statement that was said in the Beis Medrash. In fact, there are Rishonim who bring that actually that kedi is short for kidehi. as it is, meaning, in other words, it was just said as a statement in the Beis Medrash without anybody knowing who it was. Anyway, so three different versions, according to that way of looking at it, then it means some say that they know Rav Papa said it, some say they know Rav Shimi Ba'ashi said it, and some say we don't know who said it, we just know that it was said in the Beis Medrash. Anyway, Reisha b'mitzia v'seifa b'mekach ha-memkar. As a matter of fact, both the Mishnah is in fact talking about two different cases. The first case, the Ani Metzasiya and Ani Metzasiya, is talking about where both of them claim they found it. Each one says, "I picked it up," and now we're saying, now we have to figure out, well, did one of them pick it up first and then the other one, or did both of them pick it up at the same time, etc. As we mentioned before, Tosfos says conceivably both of them could be telling the truth, as we'll learn on Omer Beis. Actually, both of them conceivably could be telling the truth. They might have both picked it up at the same instant. But then the Sefer, when it says Kula Shali, and Kula Shali is referring to Mekach HaMemker, each one is claiming that I bought the thing. So again, since we don't have a proof one way or the other, then therefore Yachloku. Rashi adds the point that there you have both of their claims conceivably could be true because the seller may have been willing to sell it to both of them. On the other hand, Rashi points out, if each one says, "I wove it," then we don't say Yachloiku, because one of them is definitely a Ramai. One of them is definitely lying then, because it's impossible that both of them wove it. Weaving is a one-person job, and therefore Yehei Munachad Sheyaveh Eliyahu. Tosfos similarly had discussed before that when you have, only when you have, in this kind of case, where both of their claims can be true, only then will we say Yachloiku, or in some cases we say Kol Da'alim Gvar, but where necessarily one of their claims rejects and then makes it impossible for the other ones to be true, and vice versa, then we say Yehem Munachad Sheyaveh Eliyahu. Anyway, we're talking about one case in the Mishnah is where each of them claim that they found it, and the other one is claiming that, and then the other case is that each one of them claims that he bought it. Therefore, Utsricha, and in fact, we need the Mishnah to be telling us that in both cases we have the same din of Yachloik. We have the same din that they both have to take a Shavua, and they both have to Yachloik. So the Gemara says, "What de'it tana metzia? If we had only learned in the case of the metzia that they swear, and each one of them collects only half of it, have amina? Then you would think metzia who deramu rabban and shvua alei. You know why by metzia the chum imposed the shvua on him mishum de modi? Because otherwise he may rationalize for himself and say that there's a reason why I should be entitled to it, even though he's not actually trying to steal. We don't assume that when he's coming to Beis Din with the claim that Ani Metzasiya, not necessarily is he trying to steal, to actually steal and take away something that legitimately belongs to the other person out there. Well, he is, but in other words, the point is not that he's doing it because he's a Rasha and he wants to steal, but rather because he's going to rationalize to himself, but Omar, and he's going to think, Chavroi, Lav Midi, Chosaba, after all, my friend, the other guy over here, didn't lose anything by it. Like this, it was a windfall for him. Before, he didn't have anything at all. Now, at least he'll have. And he picked up the whole thing, fine. But without picking it up, he would have had nothing. Therefore, it's not so bad. Therefore, the second one thinks, Azel Itbis, let me go grab on to half of it, the Ispalik Bahadeh, and I'll be able to split it with him, and he'll rationalize. And he'll rationalize that it's not so bad because he's not taking away anything that belonged to the guy before him. Therefore, when he has to swear a shvua, then that will make him not do that. When it comes to buying and selling, you can't say that. After all, it would mean depriving the person of something that he legitimately paid for. Now, Rashi points out, the Gemara is going to explain soon that when it says Yachloiku in the case of Mekach HaMemker, we're going to have to be talking about that both of them paid for it. And therefore, if we're going to say Yachloiku, means the seller is going to have to refund each one half his money. We're talking about an item that's worth $10, let's say, and each one of them paid $10 for it, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara soon. And the Mercher is not sure which one he sold to. So we're going to say they're going to split it between them, and the Mercher will refund them each $5. Fine, but so there's not actually having a hefsir either. However, Rashi points out still it's a chisorin because he wouldn't have bothered buying it unless he actually needed it. So, but on the other hand, with a metziah, so therefore with a buying, he may be less likely to rationalize that I'm not doing anything wrong by that, because he's going to realize, after all, I am causing the guy a hardship by taking away half of the thing from him, which he really needed to buy for himself, and therefore we have reason. Therefore, we should think that maybe in that case he's less likely to make a false claim in the first place. A maloi, so you would think maybe a shvura is not even necessary. And therefore, the Mishnah has to stress that even in that case, a shavua is necessary. What we're actually going to say then in that case, in other words, we're in effect going to say that we're going to consider the one who's grabbing a hold of the metziah is in fact a gazlan gomer. And therefore, or no, on the contrary, we would think that by Mecha Chomemker, we would say if he's actually grabbing on to half the talus, maybe we would say, well, then in that case, he's an outright gazlan, and maybe we shouldn't even trust him with a shvur. So therefore, we're talking about both of them are holding it. But let's consider the possibilities are over here that one of them actually picked it up, that one of them actually bought it, and now the other one is falsely claiming that he owns half of it. Now again, he's going to cause then a hardship to the other guy, because now the other guy's only have half a use of it and not the complete one. So maybe we would think either we don't need to be mashbia him, because to begin with he wouldn't make a false claim like that, or if he is making a false claim, then maybe we should be concerned that he's koshed al shvua as well, and therefore it's a one way or the other. We shouldn't make him swear. So therefore, the Mishnah needs to mention the case of Mecha Chomemker. The Iton of Mecha Chomemker, on the other hand, if the Mishnah only told us in the case where he actually bought it, then you would say the other way around, that who the Romer Rabbon and Shavua Ale, then Fakert, we would say, only in that case to the Chachamim impose a Shavua, Mishum de Murdi V'Omar, because there we have a different kind of rationalization that he could use to say that he should be entitled to take half of it. He'll think to himself, Chavroi Domi Koyohi V'Ano Domi Koyohivna. After all, each of us paid for the thing, so therefore I have a certain claim to half the thing. So now that I need it myself, let me take it for myself. Let me claim that I own the whole thing because I bought it. And as far as the other guy, let him go to the trouble of going and finding another one to buy. Because at least there are other things available like this to buy, so it's not so bad if he has to do that. But when it comes to a metziah, you can't say that. A metziah is a one-off. There's no reason to think that the guy is going to find another metziah like this, that he should be able to that Shimon should be able to rationalize that Reuven can easily go find another such metziah, and therefore make a false claim. Amalois, you would think that maybe not. Again, maybe we would say we don't need to be mashbia him because he wouldn't make such a false claim in the first place. Or maybe we can't be mashbia him because there's the concern that he is actually a gazlan and we can't trust him in a shavua. Tzricha, therefore, the Mishnah needs to mention in both cases, I'd say that also in the case of a metziah, we also need to be swear both of them, and then on the basis of that, yacholiku. In that Rishima from the Rebbe, he deals with the point over here. So Mecha Chomemker. So before we were talking about Metziah, which implies when a person has a Hisodorus Melamaila, he was going about his regular day, and all of a sudden he has a Hisodorus Melamaila that motivates him to do a mitzvah. That would be the Metziah. Mecha Chomemker would be where he actually puts in effort to it. So now we have also that there can be an argument between him and the Mashpia who got him to do the mitzvah. Where he can say the expression is litrach lizban. He can say let him go to the tircha of buying. Meaning, in other words, one of them can say, you know what, he didn't put enough tircha into that mitzvah. He didn't put in enough effort and enough resources and whatever into the mitzvah, and therefore he shouldn't get the entire schar. I should be entitled to more of the schar because I'm the one who motivated him to do it more. And therefore, we're saying also that each of them takes a shvur, representing again that each one arouses by themselves their Yiras Shemayim to show in the case of the Mashpia that his Toichacho was sincere, was Dvorim HaYotzim and Alev, in the case of the one who did the mitzvah to show that he wasn't just doing the mitzvah on a superficial level, but he actually meant it. And then on the basis of that, Yechloku. But that's why he said, that's why in the case of the Mitzia, the expression is just Eshkalei Ano, let me take it. And in the case of the Mecha Chomemker is using the expression Litrach Lizban, let him go to the Tircha of buying, because the buying and selling represents the kind of mitzvah where there was Tircha involved, where it didn't come Hisoris Malamaila, where he had to work on it himself. Okay. So the Gemara asks, so you're telling me in the case of Mecha Chomemker, you're saying that it's uncertain which one actually bought it. So why? The Lechzi Zuzi, Miman Nokat. Why don't we just see, well, let's just ask the seller who paid him the money. Now, Rashi refers to a Gemara in Kiddushin that says just that. When you have a seller, we believe him to say, Lazem Macharti, Lazem Loi Macharti, that I sold it to Reuven and not to Shimon. So we should ask him. Now, Rashi adds that there, the Gemara mentions that that's only when he still has the item in his possession. Once he already gave it to one of them, then he doesn't have that namonus anymore, because then he doesn't necessarily remember. But the Gemara explains over there, as it's going to explain similarly over there, that as it's going to explain similarly over here, that we're talking about he actually did get money from both of them, one midaite, one baal kerchay, and therefore he doesn't remember so clearly. But over here, on the face of it, the Gemara is assuming in the Hava Amina that he only received money from one of them. So therefore, even after he sold the item, he should still be able to remember, yeah, Reuven was in my store and bought this thing, Shimon was not. So why don't we just ask him? No, not necessarily, not as much, because eventually, once they left, then he may not remember that so clearly. So therefore, when he has the item still in his hand, then we're going to believe him, whether it's one person who actually paid for it or whether both of them actually paid for it. But here the Gemara is assuming, to begin with, that the case is, in fact, only one of them paid for it. Now, the maskana is going to be that, yeah, we're talking both of them paid for it. But in the Hava Amina, the Gemara assumes that it means only one of them paid for it. And the question is that in that case, we should believe him even afterwards. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says you don't even really need that. Look, even if he doesn't have the item in his hand anymore, still he should be like an Eid Echad. So therefore, the one who has the Moichel on his side should be Potter from a Shavua, and the other one would be Chayav a Shavua because he has one Eid against him. And we're not even talking here, the Gemara is going to eventually explain that the Shavua that we're having each of them take is only a Shavua de Rabbanon, because we don't want people grabbing the talis from one another and saying that it's mine. But here, we should say one of them has a one aid against him, and therefore he should be swearing a Shavur Darad Isa. That's one of the three cases where a person swears a Shavur Darad Isa when there's one aid against him, when he's Moed of Mikzas and a Shoiner, and all three of them are going to be dealt with throughout Arma Sabda. So that's the Gemara is asking then, according to Tosfos, it's not even a matter of the special Nammonus of a seller, just he should be counted as one aid. Then Tosfos says, okay, the Gemara could have easily answered, let's say he's out of town. Is the case of our Mishnah. Then the Tosfos brings from the Ri a different answer. We should ask them, well, we're not necessarily choshed that they're going to outright lie and claim they gave money when they didn't. So therefore, we should ask each one of them, which one of you actually gave the money, or which one did the Moichu actually receive money for? So in other words, because they're arguing which one the seller was willing to sell to, but not which one they actually gave the money to, at least that's the Gemara's Hava Amina. And the answer is, he did in fact get money from both of them. One he was willing to sell to, and the guy gave him money with his will, with his willingness, meaning, in other words, you have Reuven and Shimon come to him to buy the thing, and Levi decides, you know what, I'm more willing to sell it to Reuven. For whatever reason, I like Reuven better, the money that he's giving me is better quality, whatever it is, doesn't really matter exactly. So therefore, so when Reuven offers him the money, then he takes it willingly. When Shimon offers him the money, he takes it only by korcha, because Shimon pressures him into it. So v'loya dainim, mi'u midaita, mi'u ba'al korcha, and now he doesn't know which one was midaita and which one was ba'al korcha, and therefore we can't just ask him, or according to the second explanation in Tosfos, we can't ask them which one the moicher took your money, because the fact is he did take it from both of them, and that's why we need that each one of them is going to take a shavua. And then they're going to split it, and splitting it would mean therefore that the moicher is going to refund each of them half their money. We have to be talking about that the Moichor agrees that he took money from both men. So in that Rishima that Eber points out to a couple of more Nakudas over here. First of all, by the expression that we said before, I forgot to mention when he said the guy is saying I need this thing, so let me take it for myself, and the other guy can go and buy another one. That Eber explains doesn't just mean I need the thing; it also means the thing needs me. Meaning the mitzvah has more of a shaychus to me. It needs me more to do it than the other guy. So I will take the schar for it. And the other guy obviously didn't put enough tircha into the mitzvah. So if the mitzvah needs him for its accomplishment, then he should go and do it again. And we're saying that we say we don't do that. But now we're saying also, as far as the midaita and bal korchoi, that represents different degrees of ava that the person might have. That the silver money represents ava, and in Tanya the Alter Rebbe talks about that gold represents gvura, and silver represents chesed, which ava is a branch. So we're talking about over here that both of them gave silver, both of them have an ava involved, but there are different degrees. There are different degrees of ava, and therefore you can have one of them is midaita, one of them can be described as midaita and bal korchoi. And therefore, so which one is more entitled to the schar? So therefore, we're not sure. And therefore, therefore we're saying, in other words, that so you have in other words, he explains you have a chosid versus a gibur hakovish es yitzray. A chosid is he brings from the Rambam. A chosid is one who he has a natural desire to do good, as opposed to kovish es yitzray means he doesn't have that natural desire, but he forces himself. And then with an Abba, you have similar distinctions. So therefore, over here also, so you have, there can be an element of Bar Kochai over here, and therefore we can have the argument between them in Avoda, which one was Midaita and which one was Bar Kochai, and therefore which one has the greater degree of Schar. And therefore we're saying that they both take their Shavua, and they both have their share in the Schar. Okay. So the Gemara says, Lema mas nisin deloike ben nanas. Would we have to say that our Mishnah does not go like ben nanas? And usually, of course, we would like that a stam Mishnah should go according to everybody. De'i ben nanas, if our Mishnah went according to ben nanas, Omar, he says in a case in Masech de Shavuos involving two different Shavuos, Kate and Eva Boyle de Shavuos Shav. How do you have a case where both of them are going to swear a Shavuos Shav? The case that ben nanas is talking about over there is called Chenvoni al Pinkosei. So you have like this, Reuven has previously hired workers. When it comes time to pay them, he tells them, go to Shimon, the storekeeper, and he'll give you food in the amount that I owe you. Now, later on, so Shimon has written down in his notebook that he gave them X amount, and the idea is, of course, eventually he's going to get reimbursed from Reuven. So now what happens is Shimon has written down in his notebook that these guys came and he gave them food, and now, therefore, Reuven owes him $100. Meanwhile, the workers claim we never got it from Shimon. And therefore, Reuven, you owe us $100 for our work. So the result is, the Mishnah says, both Shimon and the workers have to swear in Beis Din in each other's presence and in the presence of Reuven, and Reuven has to pay both of them. So, but on the other hand, Ben Nana says, no, because it comes out, one of them is going to be a false shvuah. Either the workers did go to the store and get the food, or they didn't. So according to Ben Nanas, why in our Mishnah are they both taking a shvuah when on the face of it, one of them is going to be a shvuah shav? And the answer is no. I feel a tame of Ben Nanas. You could say that our Mishnah is according to Ben Nanas. Hosam vade ikka shvuas shav, because over there, there's no question there's a shvuas shav. Either they did go and get the food, or they did not go and get the food. So of necessity, one of them is going to be a false shvuah. For that reason, by the way, the Gemara explains, they swear in each other's presence and in the presence of Reuven, all three parties have to be present, because that may embarrass them, not just as a matter of Shavuos Shav, which their Beis Din tells them how severe it is, but also they may be embarrassed to take a sort of false Shavuos in the present, in the face of somebody else who knows that they're lying, so yeah. Here, there's not necessarily a shvuas shav involved, because the fact is, both of their claims can be true. They may well have picked it up both at the same time, and each of them legitimately owns half of it. Or in the case of Mekachomemka, also you could say that both of them did give money to the storekeeper, maybe even both Biritsono or whatever, and therefore that they're both entitled. So that's why we have, even according to Bananas, we're going to have them each take a shvuah, because their shvuahs are not necessarily contradicting one another. Okay, the Gemara says, Lema mas nisin deloike sumchus. Now, do we have to say that our Mishnah is not according to sumchus? If it was like Sumchos, Ha'omar, he says, as we learned this in Baba Kama, and we're going to learn it a number of times in our Masechta, later in the Masechta mostly, Momen Amutu B'Safik Chokin B'Lo Shvur, he says that when you have a Safik on money, then you divide it without a Shvur. The case that Sumchus is talking about, we had, for example, in Baba Kama, Shosh Nogah Chasaporev, Nimtza Ubra Betzida, where you had an ox gores a cow, you find a dead baby near the cow. The question is, was the baby killed because of the negicha, and then therefore the owner of the shor is responsible for that as well, or was it miscarried before that, and therefore he's only responsible for the damage to the mother cow? So the Mishnah had said over there that the Mazik only has to pay a quarter of the Nezik for the Vlad, and that he has to pay a quarter of the Nezik for the Vlad, and that would be according to Sumchus that he said, Momen Amutu B'Safik Chokin, and therefore it's a Safik. Would he have to pay Chatzi Nezik for that Vlad or nothing at all, and therefore he pays a quarter? And Sumchus says that you do it without a shvur. This is Momen Amutu B'Safik. So why over here are they swearing? So the Gemara answers back the Elamayu Rabbanon. So what are you going to think then? That our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim who argue with Sumchus. Ha'amri Amotzi Mechavel Avaraya. Well, then that's even worse. They're going to say Amotzi Mechavel Avaraya. So then that's nothing at all like our Mishnah. We were saying that each of them swears and collects half of it. So what are you going to say? Our Mishnah doesn't go like either one of them. Obviously, it's a different case. But the Gemara answers back, hi, Mai, what kind of an argument is that? If you were to say that our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, then it would work very simply. The fact is, in that case of the Shor Shenogah Chasapara, neither one is Toifus in it. Only one of them is Toifus in it. The Mazik owns the animal. The Nizik does not own the Shor. So they could say, you Nizek want to say that out of this shur should be paid the value of the vlad of your cow, then bring proof because the other guy is muhsak in the shur. But we would say, on the other hand, here both of them are holding on to the shur. Paugilav shvur, then therefore there's no choice, and we make each of them take a shvur because there's no moitz machaveri. Rashi explains, each one is holding on to the entire talus or to enough of the talus that he has a claim on the entire thing. So therefore, we can't say you can't say I'm moitzi mechavel avaraya, and neither one is more moitzi than the other one. So therefore, you would say that therefore the Chacham said there's no choice, and therefore they have to take a shavua. So that would be according to the Chachamim. Eli am Sumchus. But if you said that our Mishnah goes according to Sumchus, then it can't be. Hashto ma hosim b'lei tapsi tavayu chokin b'lei shvor. Ma docha b'lei, where neither one is holding, where only one of them. The fact is, only the owner of the shur is holding on to the shur. And yet Sumchus says that there we would say that he gets that Nizik is entitled to a quarter payment, to Revia Nizik. And still, there's no shvur involved, even though he's motzi mechaveri. How much more so, where both of them are holding on to it? Of course, we should say that both of them. Of course, we should say that it should be done without a shvur. If our Mishnah is telling us that you need to have a shvur, then on the face of it, it can't be according to Sumchus. And again, we would rather that a stam Mishnah goes according to everybody. However, the Gemara says, no, a filo tema sumchus. You could even say that our Mishnah does go like sumchus because ki omas sumchus shem of a shem. I will bori your body like omar. The difference is that sumchus's case we'd be talking about where each one is a shema. Neither one actually knows what the actual facts are. Did the cow give birth before it was gored or after that? So neither one is saying a certain claim. Therefore, sumchus says don't bother with a shvur. Just split it between them and have done with it. Have a bori, bori layomar. But here we're talking about each one is claiming bori. Each one is claiming for sure that I own this. That I own this talis. So even Sumchus might agree that you take a shvur. Well, olor Rabba Bar Rav Huna de'omar Sumchus afilu bori yubori. What about the Rabba Bar Rav Huna understands Sumchus to be saying that he would say when he says momen amoto b'safet chokin, even when there's a bori versus bori claim. And in fact, he might say, even that in the case of the Shor Shenogah Chasapara, each one of them is claiming with certainty. Beis Din isn't sure because they don't have evidence. They don't have Aiden, what happened one way or the other. But they themselves are, each one is claiming. The one is claiming definitely the cow gave birth before, and the other one is claiming the cow definitely gave birth after. So according to Rav Baravona, even then, Sumchus says that we divide it without a shvura. So according to him, then why in our Mishnah would we not say that? And the answer is, afilu tema Sumchus, still, you could even say our Mishnah goes according to Sumchus, ki omar Sumchus, hecha de'ika drora de mamoina. Because Sumchus' din would only apply where there's a drora de mamoina, which we'll explain in a second, aval hecha de'leka drora de mamoina loy, but not where there's no drora de mamoina. Now, what is drora de mamoina? Wait, so Rashi explains that drora de mamona means a chisorin of money. In the case of the Porah and the Vlad, one or the other is going to be losing out something that he shouldn't have lost out, because after all, either the baby was born before the goring and therefore would be unjustly taking away money from the owner of the shur, or it was born afterwards, it was miscarried afterwards, and then if we don't make him pay, we'd be unjustly taking away money from the owner of the Porah. He should be entitled to money for the Vlad. Therefore, Sumchus is going to say that there's Dura Mamona, and therefore he's going to say that, because one way or the other, we're going to be machaser mammon. We're going to cause him to be losing money that he should otherwise legitimately be entitled to. Then, therefore, we're going to split it between them, says Sumchus, without a shvur. But in our Mishnah, there's no drora de mamona. They found the talus. It's not like it's something that they invested money in. So, therefore, then Sumchus would say differently that they do need a shvur. So, according to Rashi, that's the explanation of drora de mamona. Tosfos gives a different explanation, that drora de mamona means even without their tainus, the case itself inherently has a suffix. In the case over there, the fact is we don't know when the baby was born before or after. Whereas over here, it's not an inherent suffix, because the suffix is only caused by their tainus. Only when they come to Beis Din, both holding the talus and say Zerim Kula Shali, Zerim Kula Shali, only then does the suffix first come up, as opposed to by Shosha Norka Hasapara, where you have an inherent suffix even without their claims one way or the other. Then you have a third explanation that we show him bring, that the word Drora de Mamona means the ikur of the mamon. So the Ramban brings over here, first of all, based on a targum, that the word drora can be related to a tvia. So we're talking about, in other words, where there's a claim between one and the other, where one is more muchzak than the other, as opposed to here. You don't really have that because neither one is muchzak. And then he brings also from Rabbeinu Hanano that drora de mamona means ikur mamon. The ikur of the money, who does it really belong to? Again, over here, you don't really have that to begin with. There's a talus that was found, and neither one has more of an ikur shaychus to it than the other, as opposed to over there, one has a more ikur shaychus to the para, and the other one to the shur. So therefore, even Sumchus might agree that in our case, we each of them takes a shur.
Now, with regard to the case of the cow, we don't go with the chazakos that most people, most birds, carry. The only reason why it's on the side, because the fact is
we find this baby dead. We have a chazakah de mahashta. We have a chazakah that now it's dead. We don't know that. It's not a strong enough claim. It's not a strong enough claim to say that we should that should be a reason. So according to the Chachamim, we say amotz mechavel v'raya. According to Sumchus, we're saying yachloipu. Yeah, no, the fact that most animals give birth to healthy babies is neither here nor there. The fact is, this particular one we see is dead, and we don't know that. That's the whole point. We don't know. Anyway, but the Gemara says, the lav kavachomer. The problem with that is, it isn't an actual kavachomer. In that case, where each one has a drora de mamona, however we define drora de mamona, one or the other of them is definitely going to be losing out, or one or the other of them definitely has more of a claim to it than the other, whatever. The ikalamemakulamar, and you could say that it actually belongs completely to one or completely to the other. There's no way. Why are we saying that he gets revia nezik? On the face of it, it really should have to be either half or nothing. The fact is, there's no case really where we would say that the shur goring the mother animal causes only half the damage to the animal. Really, it should be either all or nothing. And yet, almost sumchus moment on multiple suffer chokin b'le shavua, and still sumchus says that you divide without a shavua. Hocha deleka drurah d'mamona. Here, there's no drurah d'mamona. We're not necessarily causing a loss to one versus the other. Well, we're not necessarily. We have an inherent, so we don't have the inherent suffix until they actually show up in Beis Din or whatever. The ikala may be tabayu here. And the fact is, we could say it does belong to both of them because both of them may have picked it up at the same time. Loi koshken, how much more so that sumchus should say that we divide it without a shavua? So, why? So, if our Mishnah is saying that they need a shavua, then on the face of it, that's not like sumchus. So the Gemara answers, afilu tema sumchus. After all, you can even say the Mishnah goes like sumchus because you could say shvur is medirabanan. This shvur is only medirabanan. We're not talking about sumchus. It's talking about over there that midaraisa, there's no shvur, and we're not going to impose a shvur on them. Here we're talking about in a specific case over here, we're going to make them take a shvur, kidirab yechanan, like what Rabbi Yechanan says. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, shvur is utakonas hachamim hi. This shvur is specifically utakonas hachamim. Shaloy yehi kol echad vechad poilich betokif, italis yeshachaveir, vayim shalihu. You don't want everybody grabbing hold of a talus of somebody else and saying it's mine. So therefore we make them take a shvur in case they're actually lying, then this way it should hold them back from claiming falsely because they're going to know how serious a shvur shav is. But in the case of the shor shenogach hazapara, you don't have that consideration. And therefore, Sumchus says there's no reason daraisa to make each of them take a shvur. And therefore, there's no particular reason for the chachamim to impose a shvur. In such a case, it's a rare enough case that we're not worried about. And it's obviously not something that he did deliberately or anything. So even Sumchus might agree. Yes, there's no drora de mamona over here. Yes, so we said before, if we say that Sumchus holds by body, you take a shvur anyway, then of course our Mishnah works out very neatly. If you say that even according to him, body, you still don't take a shvur, and then drora de mamona versus not, it's not a matter of drora de mamona, it's a matter of that specifically over here, we have a specific reason to make a takana for shvur, which doesn't apply in other cases. And therefore, even Sumchus would agree with our Mishnah. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, we'll continue Matzah Shabbos, talking about more details of who our Mishnah might be like, and then starting to analyze the case in the Mishnah in more detail. Okay.